Chapter 24. The Unremembered Empire. Those who urgently wish to rule are the last people who shall be allowed to do so. Conor, Private Writings. On the morning of the next day, the main strength of the Ultramar fleet put out from a crag and, by the light of the Pharos, met the ships that Obaday's dream had foretold were coming to them. From the bridge of his flagship, clad in ceremonial plate, Gilliman looked into the hololithic projection before him. He saw the face of his brother looking back. Gilliman smiled. "Well met, Sanguinius," he said. "I welcome you to Ultramar and the 500 worlds. It is good that you are here. Now we can begin." Sanguinius, Primarch of the 9th Legion Blood Angels, entered the audience hall, trailing an honor guard of his finest warriors, clad in their bright crimson war gear. He was always a breathtaking figure, dressed in golden armor and a mantle of spotted carnadon fur. His face, so noble a feature, was framed by a radiant sunburst. His great wings, of course, made him more like an angel than anything else. Gilliman stepped forward to meet him, and they embraced. Then Sanguinius turned to the lion and embraced him too.
"Whence come you, brother?" Gilliman asked.
"From Cygnus Prime," Sanguinius replied. His voice was, as ever, like music, but Gilliman could sense pain deep within it. "From a bloody fight and a hard betrayal. I fear that my fleet has been adrift in the warp for a long time since, and only your strange light has shown us the way out."
"What strength are you?" asked the lion.
"To all sensible purposes, my entire legion," Sanguinius replied.
"And what befell you on Cygnus Prime?" asked Gilliman.
Sanguinius seemed reluctant to reply. "We faced down an enemy the like of which we have never known," he replied. "It cost us. It is now my dearest intention to make best speed for Terra and stand alongside our father against the treachery of Horus Lupercal."
"Return to Terra at this time is not viable," said Gilliman. "I am sorry to say that the ruin storm chokes all travel out." "We too wish to stand with Terra, if Terra still stands," the lion said, including both himself and Gilliman in the remark. "For now we must abide here and build other strengths."
"In what particular?" asked Sanguinius.
"I want Rabute to tell you about his efforts to keep the very essence and spirit of the Imperium alive," the lion said. "I want him to tell you about Imperium Secundus."
The three brothers stood and looked upon the body of Vulcan for a long time. The fallen Primarch had been placed in a golden casket fashioned by artisans of the Mechanicum.
"Vulcan! Terra, you should have told me, Rabute," said the lion. "Just as you should have told me about Conrad,"
Gilliman replied.
"What was it? You keep too many secrets, brother," the lion reminded him.
"Point taken," Gilliman said. He sighed.
"It is a preservation capsule," Gilliman told his brothers. "It is intended to sustain our dear brother Vulcan's body in the slightest hope that his extraordinary gifts may yet return him to life."
The top of the casket was clear glass. Vulcan's body had been dressed in fresh war gear taken from Gilliman's armory and decorated in the livery of the Salamanders. His hammer, Dawnbringer, lay upright across his breast. No one had been able to remove the spear lodged in his heart.
"It is a sorry sight," whispered Sanguinius. "How many more of us must fall? How many more of us will Horus take?"
"Vulcan lives," said Gilliman. "This is the cry of the Salamanders, and I heartily uphold it. Even in his state of death, he represents the will in us to survive."
"It is still a sad fate," said Sanguinius, "to be held in a casket here, in the cold cellars of your fortress, consigned for all eternity."
It is not a fate I would wish, Gilliman agreed. He gestured towards the figures of Zaitos and the other salamander's survivors who had blown to Macrag from the bosom of the storm. They knelt around the golden casket, forming a mourning vigil. I have pledged that once the storm has abated, good Zaitos and his brothers will transport our brother's body back to Nocturne and inter him in the clean soil of his home world. This is more fitting, the lion said. They withdrew from the vault. Gilliman turned and took a last sad look at the casket. Engraved upon it, on a gilded scroll, were the words, "The Unbound Flame."
"Will he do it?" Yutun asked.
"I believe the Lord Sanguinius is somewhat unwilling," said Farith Redloss. "Well, they are talking, at least," Dolor pointed out. The three Primarchs had withdrawn to the seldom-visited chamber where Gilliman had set the long table and the 21 seats draped with banners. The broad doors were closed. Yutun and the ranked officers of all three legions were obliged to wait in the hall for a verdict or command.
"He is the most suitable," Yutun said. "To see him up close, Lord Sanguinius is the most..."
She searched for a word.
"He is angelic," said Dolor.
"He is numinous," added Farith Redloss. "He is more like his father in that respect. Some of the Primarch lords are very much of the flesh. Horus is one, and your Lord Gilliman another. They have physicality. But the Emperor, to be in his presence, is to be in the presence of that which is spiritual and has no constant form. It is said that the Emperor appears to each man in the image that man wishes to see. I think Lord Sanguinius has inherited much of that trait."
Yutun nodded. "It is true. I do not think of him as a face or a figure. I think of him as a light. The very colour of his hair and his eyes seems to change with his mood and with mine."
"This has been noted by others," Dolor agreed. "Several of the Primarchs have this quality, beyond simple physical stature, but none more than Sanguinius."
"He would be perfect," she said.
"Many think so," said Farith Redloss, "just as many wonder why Horus and not Sanguinius was chosen as War Master after Ulanor. If Horus was preferred and yet has revealed such mortal flaws since, one wonders what secret flaws reside in the Lord of the Blood Angels."
"Imperium Secundus represents continuity," Gilliman said. "Since Kalth, it has been all I can do to hold the fractured parts of the 500 worlds together. Ultramar is all that we know we have. If the Imperium endures, then we will rejoin it when the storm dies. But if it has not endured elsewhere, then we have preserved it here."
Gilliman had sat in the seat marked with the cobalt blue banner of his legion. Likewise, the lion had placed himself in the seat covered by the Dark Angel's proud flag. Sanguinius had chosen to remain standing. He paced, troubled but thoughtful.
"Rabute has made this argument to me at length," said the lion, "and though I have been troubled by some of its details, I find myself seeing the value of it more and more."
"How so?" asked the angelic lord.
The lion sat back, his hands flat upon the edge of the table.
"The events of last night alone," he said in a quiet tone, "have made me value life and kinship more than ever. We have lost another brother, and Macrag, great heartstone of the 500 worlds, was almost brought low by the deeds and machinations of just one demented traitor. I have witnessed the venom of our enemy, and I have seen the sad fragility of those assets and lives that remain to us. Rabute and I do not think alike on many subjects. We disagree, but we also stand together, loyal. We fight for the Imperium, and this is all of the Imperium that we have."
"But, Regent," Sanguinius said, "that smacks of usurpation."
"It smacks of necessity," replied Gilliman.
If Terra and our father have gone, then so has Malkador. We must rally our shattered strength before it is too late. Neither the lion nor I can stomach the other assuming the role, but we are unanimous when the choice is you.
You always were the most like our father, said the lion.
Sanguinius looked up at the light of the storm spilling through the chamber's high windows.
Let me say, brother, said Gilliman, you showed no great delight in being delivered from the storm and reunited with us. You seem troubled and burdened. That tear marked beneath your eye, is that a new notation of your anguish?
We have all seen troubles, said Sanguinius. Brothers fight and fall, and the stars die. Demons walk abroad. I fear that old night steals in upon us anew. I would rage against that.
Then make your stand here for now, said Gilliman.
He stood up. Take this oath of moment, and I will make a pledge. The first moment the storm abates, the first moment we see the light of Terra or hear word that she still stands, I will light my ship drives and with all measure of my forces guide your legion back to the home world. There will be no delay or argument. We do not build a second empire here. We maintain the original, founded anew on this globe as circumstance demands.
You would make this pledge to me? Asked Sanguinius.
With all solemnity, Gilliman replied.
And you will back this? Sanguinius asked the lion.
With my blood, the lion replied.
Sanguinius sighed.
I notice in the hours since I set foot upon the soil of Macragge that there are no remembrances in your court, nor in the retinue of the lion.
He regarded them.
Is this mere coincidence?
Discretion, Gilliman replied. If Terra stands, then future generations may see, whether true or not, a heresy and usurpation in the foundation we make here. I would not stain the memory or legacies of the loyal sons with such a smirch, however unintentioned. Therefore I did conclude early in my deliberations that no piece of this undertaking should become history until history it needs to be. No chronicles will be made, no remembrances charged to observe this business and commemorate it. If Ultramar is all the Imperium we have, then in due time and with great effect its histories will be written and will become the single imperial record. But if Terra yet survives, as I most dearly hope, then this will become, in future days, an unremembered empire, an unthinkable act, undone and unthought.
Sanguinius took a deep breath.
Then it is down to us. We three decide? He asked.
There is only us, said the lion, rising to his feet. Tell us, Sanguinius, Gilliman said. Which seat will you take at this table?
It may have been the moment, or merely his imagination, but Magna Macragge Civitas seemed to glow as it had done in more glorious years. The great towers and spires of the city shone with a golden lustre, as they had done in the first era of the 500 worlds. The sky was full of ships. They moved overhead in series and formation, a procession of honour and a display of might. High up, illumined by the light of the Pharos star, the great capital ships drifted like leviathans. Below them, in the lower atmosphere, formations of fighter craft and gunships made flypast after flypast. The six great war horns of the ancient battle kings sounded across the storm-lit Civitas in unison. The streets were full. Cheering crowds filled every via and avenue, and processions of the Legiones Astartes, army, Mechanicum and Precentral forces converged from their various barracks and fortresses on the broad space of Marshall Square. Gilliman took the salute of the roaring crowds on the platform of the Propylae Titanicus. He turned to the lion at his side.
"This we do?" he asked.
The lion nodded.
"This we do, for it is right," he said.
Gilliman stepped to the side of his brother Sanguinius. He grasped his right wrist and raised his hand to the sky in triumph. Sanguinius raised his head and looked out over the cheering sea of faces and punching fists. He allowed his hand to be thrust aloft. He spread his mighty wings in a salute like the sign of the Aquila. At the top of his voice, Gilliman declared the regency, but the noise of the multitude was too great for the words to be heard.